Since many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the events that have been fulfilled among you, just as those who were eyewitnesses from the beginning and ministers of the word have handed down to us, I too have decided, after investigating everything accurately anew, to write it down in an orderly sequence for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may realize the certainty of the teachings you have received. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news of him spread throughout the whole region. He taught in their synagogues and was praised by all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had grown up, and went according to his custom into the synagogue on the Sabbath day. He stood up to read, and was handed a scroll of the prophet Isaiah. He unrolled the scroll, and he found the passage where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring glad tidings to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free and proclaim a year acceptable to the Lord." Rolling up the scroll, he handed it back to the attendant, and he sat down. And the eyes of all in the synagogue looked intently at him. And he said to them, "Today, this scripture passage is fulfilled in your hearing." The Gospel of the Lord. A few words of exegesis about this gospel reading, and then a few words of teaching. Last Sunday, we had the wedding feast at Cana from the Gospel of John, chapter 2 in John. You will remember that. And in the Gospel of John, this was the inauguration of the public life of Christ. In today's gospel, the substance of this text comes from chapter 4 in Luke, and this is Luke's version of the inauguration of the public life of Christ. He goes to Nazareth, where he grew up, and he enters the synagogue, as was his custom. Devout Jew, he enters the synagogue. He stands up to read. He always stood to read. He was handed the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, and he read this passage, which comes from the 61st chapter of Isaiah and some from chapter 58, the second half of the book of the prophet Isaiah. And after he has read it, he sat down. The rabbi always sits when he teaches, which is the origin of our chair of medicine, theology, or that's the teaching chair of the rabbi. So he sat down, and their eyes looked intently upon him. He would read in Hebrew, and he would give his homily in Aramaic. So clearly Jesus knew Hebrew well enough to read it and to interpret it, which wasn't true of everyone. Many of the people did not understand very well the Hebrew language. They spoke Aramaic, so he would give his homily in Aramaic. Notice that the Spirit of the Lord is upon him, he says here from the prophet Isaiah. Then he goes on to give this homiletic reflection on this text from Isaiah. And if you read on in this gospel, you will see their first impression was very positive. It said, "I wonder, this man from our hometown is preaching with such inspiration and insight."
The first reaction is very positive. And then he goes on to say, however, God's visitation is not just for the Jewish people. God's invitation is for all people. And he goes on to quote two events out of the Old Testament, how God visited the Gentile world, blessed the Gentile world. Their reaction to this is violent. Their religious conviction and their tradition will not allow this. And so they expel Jesus. They drive him out of Nazareth. And read on in the gospel, and he moves to Capernaum, which becomes his new hometown. And Capernaum is far more cosmopolitan, and it's far more open. Many of you have been to Capernaum in your journey to the Holy Land. It was on the Via Maris, a major trading between Alexandria in Egypt and Damascus. And therefore, it had a very mixed gathering of people, many religions, many languages, and it was far more open and cosmopolitan. Jesus moves to Capernaum. Thereafter, this will become his adopted hometown. Now, the teaching that comes out of this is those who drove Jesus out of Nazareth were profoundly religious, steeped in tradition. And it shows us, first of all, the tyranny of certainty. There's a certain tyranny about being certain, so certain that you will exclude other people. You'll make hard, rigid judgments about other people because you are certain. There's a certain tyranny about that which appears here in their violent reaction to a prophetic new revelation. The second thing about this event is in their response, there's the arrogance of privilege and presumption that somehow God belonged to them and God did not visit the pagan world. God was not present there. God was present to them and the covenant was with them only. And God's revelation came only through their tradition. It's the arrogance of presumption that somehow leads us to this conclusion that there is an unmerited privilege attached to our belief or to our tradition. If there's anywhere that this teaching must find a presence and an echo, it's in the Catholic Church, especially given the events of today and the crisis we're in. The arrogance of presumption. This sense of such supreme conviction that we have the answers and everybody else must respond to the power and the authority of the moment. Part of the crisis which we now face. Yet when we go back and look at our beginnings, they were less than arrogant. At the Last Supper, the first Mass, there was one who was a traitor, and there was one who would betray Jesus. Deny Jesus. The others, by and large, in a time of crisis, would abandon Jesus. They were less than ideal. And therefore, somehow, we were born out of a strange irony, the paradox of sin and grace. A sinful church, a broken church, an arrogant church, judgmental, excluding people, and yet at the same time, the place where God dwells, the forgiveness, the goodness of people, the sacrifices of people, the prayer, the deep, deep, holy belief of people, the kindness, the forgiveness, all of this strange irony, a strange paradox of humanity, of sin and grace. It's important we don't lose that. It's easy to get discouraged. I myself carry the same burdens you do, a burdens of anger, discouragement, and wonderment about things that happen around us. And yet, I surrender to the power of Jesus Christ. That's the place of salvation. So Jesus comes and says, I have come to bring good news to the poor, those who are impoverished, not only in material things, but impoverished in confidence and impoverished in somehow finding meaning in life. Good news to those who are poor. Sight to those who are blind. I'll give you a new way to see life, says Jesus. I will set you free. Set those who are oppressed will go free. And those who are oppressed with excessive guilt, oppressed by a tyranny, whatever it is, will go free. It's a year of favor. Look back in the book of Leviticus in chapter 25, verse 10. And you'll find out that this was a year of favor from the Lord. That's the reference there. A week of years, seven times seven. And then the 50th year would be the year of Jubilee, a year of favor. When property was restored, people were forgiven, slaves were set free. This was a year of God's visitation upon a people who were struggling. And Jesus says, this is a year of favor from the Lord. And this prophecy is fulfilled in your presence for us now, today. And finally, there is a mantra which is part of the preaching of Jesus in chapter 8 in the Gospel of John. Chapter 8, verse 30. And there Jesus said to his followers, if you follow my teaching, you will truly be my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Only the truth will set you free. And this will happen in a year of favor from the Lord. And this prophecy, my friends, is fulfilled in our presence today.